This episode of Road Dirt the Podcast is brought to you by Moto America, the premier American motorcycle road racing series. Find them at motoamerica.com. Welcome to Road Dirt, the podcast of Road Dirt Motorcycle Media and RoadDirt.tv, your down-home grassroots motorcycle brand covering what we like to call ride life, hashtag ride life these days. This is Rob Brooks, your host. Thanks for tuning in. And we continue our series called Meet the Road Dirt Crew because I'd like to introduce you to one of the latest contributors to Road Dirt. He's no stranger to motorcycle journalism, however. His name is Ken Hawkeye Glassman. And Hawkeye has been a noted motorcycle journalist in the space for several decades. And he's written for all kinds of publications over the years, lives in the Chicago area, and has written for periodicals up there, as well as national magazines. And recently started contributing to Road Dirt, and we're very thankful for him. He's a great guy. He's got a great story. And he shares some of those with us here in this podcast. So let's get right to it. All right, 3, 2, 1. Well, Ken Hawkeye Glassman, good to see you. Glad you're on the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure, and it's nice to see you in your face.
Yeah, absolutely. I know this is a podcast, so our listeners can't see us, but this is two old codgers actually getting to chat for the first time virtually. So glad to have you on here, man. I appreciate it. And, you know, for readers and subscribers and viewers that keep up with Road Dirt, Ken Hawkeye Glassman is a longtime motorcycle rider and longtime journalist in the motorsports space. And we actually found each other, if I remember, it was in the last year. It was from Neil Bailey actually connected us to each other.
Absolutely. Neil and I have known each other probably 15 years or so. We met on several press launches. And we immediately enjoyed each other's company. Yeah. So we had a lot of meals and dinners, and he's a crazy rider. I'm not, but we enjoy each other.
Yeah. Any friend of Neil's is a friend of mine. So getting to meet you was a special pleasure. And I believe, honestly, over the years, I think I've read some of your contributions to some of the big national magazines. So, I mean, you were familiar to me when he introduced me to you. So,
yeah, before... I used to do some freelance work for a few of the larger nationals. I believe all of them are gone these days.
Yeah, they're all except for Ultimate Motorcycling. There's one or two others, I think. Rider, maybe Roadrunner, that are still in print, maybe, you know, three or four times a year. But back in the heyday, that was when I read you. I read Joshua Placa. I read Neil Bailey. So getting to collaborate with you guys and all of us contributing together to Road Dirt is really a dream come true for me, and I'm very thankful for you.
Well, I liked the site when I first saw it, and you know, it's important to get quality information out to people rather than just information.
True.
It's important to get quality writing out in front of people instead of just words on a page.
Yep, I agree.
So I think what you've got going here is pretty damn cool.
We think it's pretty cool. We're excited about it. You know, just kind of this conversational storytelling based approach to motorcycling. We're all a bunch of storytellers, and you happen to be a fantastic storyteller yourself. So we're glad to have you, man.
I'm old enough where I got a lot of stories.
Yeah, for sure. I got a question to ask you. Tell me how the nickname Hawkeye, that's really a trademark of yours. How did you acquire the nickname Hawkeye over the years?
When I first started riding, I joined a motorcycle club.
Yeah.
And it was mostly, folks who were Harley people.
Yeah.
And I said, they said to me, so what's your road name? What are you talking about? Well, you know, everybody's got a road name. Mine's Traveler. Mine's Bear. Mine's, you know, I said, well, if I need a road name, my road name's Hawkeye. You mean after the MASH TV show? I said, no, I went to the University of Iowa, Iowa Hawkeyes.
There
so you
go.
Can call me Hawkeye.
Hey, that works. That's pretty cool. That was when they asked you that, the first thing that popped into your mind was your alma mater.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't ever think about it. So it just came up. I said, use that one.
And it stuck, you know. Now, I mean, in the motorcycle journalism space, you're known as Hawkeye.
And well, if you Google me, in fact, I just found out the other day, I was at a car dealership and somebody asked about it. And I Googled, if you Google Ken Hawkeye Glassman, you'll get motorcycle articles. But also, I used it in my last auto job that I had. And so like 50 automobile reviews come up when you Google it. So
pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're I found this fascinating, too. You've written for so many publications over the years. But was it the Chicago Times? What was the name of the publication that you actually not only wrote for, but there was a whole motorcycling section in that newspaper, which was unheard of to me.
Here's a funny thing. I was a founding member 27 or 8 years ago of the Midwest Automotive Media Association, or MAMA for short.
Right.
And I used to go on press events with them in the Chicagoland area. And I teamed up with the automotive writer for the Daily Herald newspaper.
Chicago Daily Herald, okay.
Not Chicago Daily Herald, just Daily Herald newspaper,
gotcha.
Which was all of the surrounding counties around Cook County, which is where Chicago is located. So it was a suburban newspaper, second largest one in the state, or third largest one in the state. And we were riding one day, and I had been riding a couple of years.
Mm.
And I said, you know, Chicago is the fifth largest motorcycle area for sales and registrations, which surprised me. I would have thought they all would have been 12-month places, California and the South.
True.
And I said, how come you don't, the newspaper doesn't do motorcycle reviews? Because he wrote all of the car reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, that would be great. I just don't know anybody who writes and rides motorcycles. So I said, well, actually you do. And
hand goes up. I'll do it.
And he said, really? I didn't know you wrote. I said, yeah, for a couple of years. I'd love to have you do some stuff. So it started with during the riding season, a weekly column on Mondays. And then that was really well received because no other newspaper had a regular motorcycle columnist.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it got great. People loved it. And then the following year, we did it twice a week. And then the following year, somebody said, you know what? Maybe we could have our own section. So it turned into, during the riding season from mid-April to mid-September, it turned into 4, 6, 8, and occasionally 12 pages of motorcycle stuff, which I edited and curated the entire section.
Yeah.
So I wrote most half the articles. I had a couple other people that I knew write some articles, like Neil Bailey wrote some stuff for us.
Yeah.
And we did that for a couple of years until, again, it was really popular, but until they let the salesperson go, and then anyone who replaced her, she was a writer herself.
Yeah.
Anyone who replaced her didn't work as hard, didn't work as smart. And then we ran into 2008 when the economy tanked and, you know, all the motorcycle dealers, except for most of the Harley dealers, a lot of the Japanese ones went out of business.
Mm.
So then it paired
kind of
back.
Dried up in your area, didn't it? Yeah.
It really did. It really did.
Wow.
So that's what doomed that particular thing. But we had a good run of, I think, 8 or 9 years.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a very, very unique thing that you know, an entire newspaper did too. I like that.
Only
now you mentioned
in,
only when, one you know, you had only you had been riding. How long have you been riding motorcycles in your life?
I had my first motorcycle delivered to me on my 45th birthday, which was in May of 1988.
Oh, wow. Okay. You got a little bit of a later start.
Start. I grew up in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
So in a 3-flat walk-up building, no garage.
Yeah.
So it was impossible to be involved with motorcycles or anything like that. Plus, that was something that my parents would not have been very happy about.
Yes.
So I decided that was not a hill I want to die on.
Right.
So I didn't get into it with them. And then I remember when I was 45 and I got I went to take the MSF class. And when my folks found out about it, my dad says, "You cannot get a motorcycle."
You're like, "Dad, I'm 45 years old."
I said, "Dad, I'm a grown ass man with two kids. That's why. And you can't get a motorcycle." He says, "I'm telling you, I'll write you out of the will." I said, "Okay, if you want to, that's fine. But I'm going to get a motorcycle."
Now, what was there an event? Was there something that you saw or experienced or a friend you talked to? What all of a sudden kind of created that thirst for, I want to get trained. I want to ride.
Well, that was at a time when every middle-aged guy, it seemed, wanted to own a Harley.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like it was a law.
Like a rite of passage into middle age, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was the typical midlife crisis buy. And I recognized it. I saw it with some people.
Yeah.
I did not want to be that stereotype.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine who I'd known for more of an acquaintance at that time, we've since become very close friends. He says, "You know, I know you're into cars and stuff and speed. Why aren't you riding a motorcycle?" "I don't know." He says, "Listen, trust me when I tell you, it'll be the most fun you ever had."
Yeah.
And he says, "And I've got a Honda CB750 and you can have it to, you know, learn on, ride, you know, until you get something you want. And I'll show you, I'll come over and I'll show you how to ride." So we went off into the parking lot of the high school and I got the feel of, you know, working the clutch and doing those things. I have very short legs, so that motorcycle was kind of tall for me.
Uh-huh.
I was only able to tiptoe and I didn't feel confident, but I knew that this would be something I think I'd get into. So I signed up for the class, took the safety class, got my license on I had a big motorcycle in the class. It was a 250 instead of a 150.
Oh yeah.
And then I said, "Well, I'm going to go get one." And I didn't want a Harley Davidson because of the stereotype of it. Plus they were all very large motorcycles except for a Sportster. And I heard that was not the best thing to own. So I went and bought a used Yamaha Virago 535.
Oh, I remember that bike. Yeah.
And everybody said, no, don't buy a 535. You'll grow out of it in 3 months. Go get at least a 750. They had a 750 and an 1100.
Yeah.
So I said, I went and I sat on him. I said, "You know what? Let me learn how to ride this motorcycle. It's only a couple $1,000. And when I learn how to ride, I'll get something I want."
Yeah.
And I think that was the perfect thing for me because I learned how to ride that year. So I started riding in May. And then sure enough, by August, I wanted a bigger one. So I got an 1100.
I was going to say, that's the one you've sent me pictures of, is that 1100.
Yeah. So, and like an idiot, and it was red and white, which I loved. And it was two model years behind. It was brand new, but two model years behind.
Mm-hmm.
And the dealer says, "Hey, I can, this one, I got a dealer trade for a red one. Somebody else had it. I could sell you one, a new one for the same price." I said, "Yeah, but the colors are awful. I want this one."
Yeah.
And I figured I'm going to have it for a while, so it's not going to matter when I wind up getting rid of it value-wise. So I got what I wanted and loved it. And I just became addicted.
It's a beautiful motorcycle too. I've seen it in, you know, in your stories that you've shared with us, and which we'll talk about in a minute. So that's a
well, gorgeous bike. At the time, I spent, I don't know, $2,000 on any aftermarket access, everything that was in Yamaha's catalog, and anything I could find that would fit onto the bike. This thing was chrome, that thing was billet, this thing was, you know, whatever it was, hubcap covers. I think I even bought a billet cover for a chrome piece. I'm not sure. But I was just, you know, whatever it was. So I dialed it up. I pimped it up pretty well.
Now, the that's the bike. We've run a two-part short story series of yours called The Last Ride, which just a really heartwarming, just a great personal story. I'm so happy you sent that to us. And in the part two of it, you know, where you take the old man out for a ride, it's, you know, it's on that bike, as you describe a Yamaha Virago in the story. Yeah. I got to know, is that based on an actual encounter? Did you meet an old fella at a breakfast diner once and chat him up about his motorcycle riding earlier years?
Yes, I did.
That is so cool.
I did, but the part two where I took him for a ride didn't happen. But I knew what and how it would go. He would have wanted to do it. The people, his friends behind the counter was like, whoa, 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 whoa. So I decided to finish the story the way it should have finished.
There you go. It's a great story too. I encourage, I'm going to drop a link in the podcast notes to part one and part two, because this is a great story. Having recently in the last 3 years, you know, said goodbye to my father, it just reminded me of so many of the stories he told me from his younger years when he rode. And just really, for me, it really resonated with me. So I love that. And I've been trying to push people to go read it, because it's a great story.
Thanks.
So after you got your license and you got that gorgeous Virago 1100 and kitted it out, have you done a number of really, what are some of your more memorable road trips you've been able to make with it?
That one, I live in Chicago, so on the border of Illinois and Iowa. They had every year they had what they called it Little Sturgis on the River in Davenport, Iowa. So me and 15, sometimes 20 of the riders in my group would take a ride out and spend the weekend out there. Anytime I'd ride anywhere with the group, it was always on two laners, never on a highway.
Yeah.
So I got to see little sights and stuff. And that was something that I enjoyed. The longer trips, I never did on any of my motorcycles. Mm-hmm. The first year I went out to Sturgis was in 2004, and Triumph gave me a Rocket 3, which was brand new at the time.
Yeah.
And so I rode that out, and coincidentally, my very good riding buddy, who had been riding Harleys all the time, was looking for something different, and I talked him into buying this Rocket 3. Mm. So the two of us wound up with identical motorcycles.
Oh, wow.
He bought his. It was a burgundy color, and Triumph gave me theirs. It was a burgundy color. So the two of us, as we traveled around, and we'd stop at, no one had ever seen that bike.
Yeah.
What the heck is that? It's a Triumph. Triumph still making motorcycles?
Yeah, that's the first question you get from people.
Yeah, they're still making motorcycles. There was a time when they weren't, but they've been back in business for 10 years.
Yeah, at really. That time, right?
And then they'd have to tell me their story about their 350, 650, 750 Bonnevilles that they all rode, all these Harley guys. And how big is the engine? 2,300 cc's. Are you kidding me?
Half a car engine.
What kind of What kind of horse? It's 147 horsepower and 148 foot-pounds of torque. Are you kidding me? And every place we went, when we got to Sturgis, any place we stopped for dinner or for lunch, I would start jerking people around because the two bikes were the same. My friend is 6'3", I'm 5'6", so we looked like, twins, the movie. And I said, what are you doing? I said, we work for Triumph, and this is a brand new motorcycle, and we travel all over the country just to see how it operates on and how, the mileage goes and everything. Wow, that's a great job.
What a great job, yeah.
Where are you going now? Well, we're going out to Sturgis. Wow, that's a great job. And then I took Victory gave me a Kingpin the following year.
I remember the Kingpin, yeah, beautiful bike.
That was a wonderful motorcycle. And what else did I do? Then Triumph, as you know, I have a Triumph Bonneville America.
Yeah.
And in 2011, I was looking to replace my motorcycle, mm-hmm. or the cruiser bike anyway. Right. And I decided that I wanted something mid-size. So I called up Triumph and I said, how about giving me a Triumph America to take on a road trip down south, and I'll write an article about seeing America on an America.
Hey, there you go. Good angle.
Perfect. Thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
So I got a bike with less than 2,000 miles dropped off. They outfitted it the way I wanted, with saddlebags and a shield and floorboards, etc. And I had a wonderful time. And when I came back, I didn't call anybody. I was waiting to see when they would call me, mm-hmm. which wasn't for about 8 weeks. I hadn't heard from anybody.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I called the guy who got me the vehicle. And I said, listen, I ain't giving this back. I want this motorcycle. So talk to whoever you got to talk to, figure out what it costs, and let me know. He says, I can't do that. While you were away, they fired everybody of top management at the office in Atlanta.
Oh, my God.
I said, well, what about this one? No, she ain't there. What about this one? He's not there. Well, who's in charge? Well, not really sure. He says, in fact, I got to be honest with you, I forgot you had the bike.
With all the chaos.
So I said, he was in charge of like the press fleet. And he was out in California. So I said, so what do we do here? I said, I can't get license plates or I need a title. I want to buy it. Well, let me see. And he calls back a couple of days later and he says, they are so busy over there and everything is so crazy. But somebody said they'd sell it to me for $6,200. Tell me where to send the check.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because all specced out, it was over $9,000 with all the God, others.
Yeah. Kitted out for road, man, for travel.
So that's what happened. I wrote him a check and it was my bike. And
the rest, as they say, is
the rest, as they say. Now that's in 2011. In 2000, right. I had never written or really ridden a sport bike.
Yeah.
Here in Chicago, we have every road is straight and flat.
Mm-hmm. It's like
so having uncomfortable ergonomics for a sport bike, it made absolutely no sense to me. And I was invited to Kawasaki. There was a motorcycle races there, and Kawasaki had a track day in conjunction, and we were going to ride around the San Francisco area. And I went. Neil Bailey was there, and he was in near San Diego. So we rode up into the mountains east of San Diego.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just love this Kawasaki Ninja 650R. It had bodywork, mm-hmm. but it had handlebars, no clip-ons.
Yeah.
So it was a comfortable gentleman's sporty bike as opposed to sport bike. And I just absolutely fell in love. I got to have one. I told the person there at the time, I got to have one of these. Will you sell me, you know, one of the demos? No, but don't worry, we'll take care of you. And I got home and it was still winter, but she calls me up and she says, okay, here's the deal. And it was a great deal money-wise. And I picked up the bike in a month or so. And I just loved it. Now, I have to admit, I got a little ahead of my skis because I forgot at the time I said, I got to have one of these, that I was still going to have to ride it on the roads around my house, which were no fun. But still, it was a fun motorcycle. And the difference between a cruiser and that bike in my world, you know, was the difference between a Lincoln Town Car and a Ferrari. It just was
night and day.
So I kept them both and I still have the two of them.
Still got them. What year is the Kawasaki?
First year of the 650R 2006.
Is that a twin or is that an inline four?
Parallel twin.
Parallel twin. Okay.
So it doesn't have the horsepower of like a 600 Ninja 4.
But it is more of, like you said, it's a gentleman sport bike, just for
absolutely
cruising, everyday riding, commuting, you know, fun in the up in the hill country. It's a great all arounder.
And then I fitted it with GV hard bags.
Mm.
And this one I had a lot done to. This one I had a power commander put on, titanium exhaust headers and muffler, braided brake lines, and just all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you feature that. You've sent me some photos of that we featured in a couple of your articles and reviews. It's cool. Well, it's a gorgeous bike.
It's a cool bike. And even after all these years, it still only has like 16,000 miles because I always use the cruiser more often.
Yeah.
And then for long trips, I never use my own bike. So
but you got the hooligan in the garage if you want to ride it.
That's when I feel frisky, I take that one. And when I just want to cruise around, I take the other one.
That's right.
Everybody should have more than one motorcycle.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. I've got three in the garage, four in the garage, two of which are running and two of which are projects. So, how many bikes are enough? Well, what's in the garage until you find something else you like, you know, as it goes. But
and my wife is a wonderful person, never gave me any heat about having two bikes, even, you know, one bike, two bike, just, you know, whatever. And she has always had a bad back. So her riding two up was not something that was overly comfortable for her. So we didn't go out very much two up, but anytime I wanted to go out for the afternoon or Saturday, Sunday, whatever, and I always had time during the week as well, never gave me a hard time. Go have a good time. Enjoy what you want.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I got one last question to ask you.
Shoot.
See how succinct you can think this one and share and give me your thoughts on it. What does motorcycle riding mean to you?
To me, it means, and everybody says this, it means freedom.
Yeah.
I like the wind in my face.
Mm-hmm.
I like the knowledge that I am able to control a powerful machine
mm-hmm.
with some skill that others may not have.
Right.
And go where I want when I want.
Yeah.
I have a convertible. Which is second, but there's nothing like just being out in the wind on a nice, sunny, warm day or fall crisp with the colors on the leaves. There's just nothing like it to me.
And it's fully, you know, that's the thing. We've talked, some of the other guys have talked about before too. You know, you're fully engaged with the bike because you're not strapped into a seat surrounded by a cage or a roof or glass. And you're, you know, both hands, both feet. You're engaging and interacting with the bike, your body, your weight, your leaning, you know, your man and machine almost become one. It's a hard experience to explain to somebody that's never ridden before. But for those who ride, you know, we get it.
It's focused. You're into it. There's no daydreaming.
That's right.
You are in the moment. And I like that. And I do not. I have communication systems in my helmet, which I only use with my phone for GPS. I have tried in the past to write about some of the communication systems. I found them to be dangerous.
Yeah, they're distracting.
I do not answer the phone. I do not speak on the phone while I'm riding. I'll listen to music at low levels, or I listen to the GPS telling me where to go.
Or just the sounds of the road and the environment you're throttling through.
Yes, sure. I very probably only 15-20% of the time do I even listen to music. I like to hear the sound of the motor and what's going on.
Exactly, man. I'm with you. That's a good description of it. I appreciate it. Well, Ken, I appreciate you coming on with us. Hawkeye Glassman is on the podcast. Thanks for coming on, my friend, and look forward to sharing more of your stories in the days, weeks, months, and years to come. And maybe one day, if I can get up there or you get down this way in Georgia, let's ride together. Let's ride and take a ride together and break bread together, my friend.
I'd rather get down to you than have you come up to me, because it'll be a lot more fun in Georgia.
A lot more fun, the riding down here, for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, hang on here, and then we'll wrap up in just a moment. Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our chat with Ken Hawkeye Glassman. Hawkeye's a pleasure to talk to, with great stories from the motorcycling life, and we appreciate him coming on the podcast. And if you're interested in any of his writings, he's written some really cool stuff already for us. One of them is a two-part short story that is just really a gripping tale that'll bring back nostalgia and memories from days of riding from yesteryear. It's called The Last Rides, Part 1 and Part 2 on roaddirt.tv, as well as several other stories and some reviews he's done for us. We're very grateful to have Hawkeye as part of the Road Dirt crew. We thank you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you like our content, give us a like. Subscribe, please. We appreciate that. Give us 4 or 5 stars. You know, that always helps as well. And we hope you'll check us out on our main media site. It is roaddirt.tv. You can check us out there for all the latest and greatest from Road Dirt and our contributors. We have a Road Dirt TV YouTube channel. You can check us out there with bike reviews, ride and race coverage, event coverage, things like that, as well as our social media channels. We're on Facebook, Instagram, their new little thing called Threads, and the X, formerly known as Twitter. We're out there as well. All of those are Road Dirt TV. So, hey, until next time, this is Rob with Road Dirt, encouraging you to ride life.